All right. Well, obviously this weekend, Mother's Day, and perfect timing to talk to Anne Walsh, who is the author and editor of Out of the Mouths of Moms, From the Trenches of Motherhood. She joins us by phone. How are you doing, Anne?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
So this isn't just your story. And so I'm curious about the idea to open this up and make this about lots of moms and not just your own motherhood story. Like, was that there from the get-go, or was this something that you kind of developed in time as you were working on the project?
The inspiration for the book started with my story because I was surprised by many of the elements of motherhood that came up for me. But the idea for the book came from speaking with other moms and realizing how similar their experiences were to mine, because I just thought it was me. I just thought, oh, okay, I'm really struggling with this. No one else seems to be struggling. I might just not be cut out for this. But as an art therapist, years later, my kids are in school. Everything's behind me. You know, they're sleeping through the night, and it's all good. And now I've got moms coming in, and I'm thinking, yes, that is exactly what my experience was. And after enough mothers had come through, and I was realizing there's a pattern here. We all seem to be dealing with the same thing, but no one seems to know. It's like a big secret. Why is it a big secret? Why don't we know this? And I realized that people outside of therapy, they don't really talk about the real struggles that they're going through as moms. And I think part of it is that we feel this pressure to be a really good mom and to be perfect and to get it all right. Mm-hmm. And in order to maintain that image that, yes, we're doing well, our kids are doing well, we don't open up. We don't speak about the real struggles. And I couldn't really get moms to open up to each other. Like, I'd be like, hey, maybe we can talk about this in a group. But the dialogue changes. They don't express themselves in the same way when they're around other moms. And I just decided that maybe I could interview them and collect their stories, and then mothers could read the stories, and that way they could share their experience, but they didn't have to expose themselves. So in my book, I don't mention any names. I just use a title for each book so that the moms know which story is theirs. And my goal was for every mom to be able to pick up the book and resonate with at least one of the stories.
Right.
And so I aim to get a really huge variety of stories. And that's what happened. People came forward with all sorts of stories. And I didn't turn anybody away. Anybody who wanted to share their story, I put in my book. Some of the moms that I interviewed didn't want their story in the book. After we had talked and I wrote out our interview and sent it to them, it was too raw and they weren't ready to share it. And they just needed to process it. So not all of the stories are in. I interviewed more than 50 moms. But the ones who did share their stories, they did so because they wanted other moms to know that they weren't alone and that it's okay to struggle. We all do. It's normal. And this is hard work. And they made it through, and those moms will make it through as well.
You mentioned people kind of being guarded to tell their stories. In terms of like soliciting them then, like how do you, I don't know, overcome that or like kind of get around that guarded nature? Like what was your kind of sell to people to get them to open up like this?
Actually, it was interesting because as soon as I posted it on Facebook and I put posters up in the coffee shops and the library and just saying I was looking for stories for my book, many moms came forward. There was no twisting of the arm, but I think a key was that they weren't going to be named. That was the key, is that it was anonymous. So if I had said, oh, can you come and speak to a group of people about your story? Mm. I think it would have been different because they would have been exposed and vulnerable. But somehow the fact that they could help other moms by telling their story without needing to reveal who they were was an essential part of the process.
Right. Now, you mentioned, you know, the expectations to like succeed as a mother and you know, work-life balance should be something that happens, and no one talks about the struggles around it. When it came time to kind of addressing that with some of the moms and their stories, you know, was there like relief on their part to kind of open up about this struggle and this like kind of like false narrative that we've created of, you know, everyone succeeds, or, you know, especially because like social media, you only kind of post necessarily like your successful Pinterest meal or, you know, your like perfect vacation photo or something, and not, you know, the meal that your child ate two bites of and threw in the garbage or things like that.
Or that you burnt because you were busy doing something else and you burnt your meal and had to order pizza, and the realities.
Right.
They don't show up on social media. So the mothers talked about quite a few stories are about struggling to figure out that balance between work and being at home. And I think certainly I experienced this, but many of the moms had a turn in their values. They had a shift where they were always a career mom, and all of a sudden they had a child and they had to go back to work, but they didn't want to. They wanted to be with their child.
Uh-huh.
Or they had this idea of, you know, I'm going to have this baby and I'm going to be at home and I'm going to get my 1 year maternity leave. And then suddenly they realized they didn't want the year maternity leave and they want to go back at work. They were going crazy at home. And for some of the moms, making that decision to go back to work because it was the best thing for their family, they couldn't be as good a mom being at home. They needed to go to work. And that was the best thing for their own mental health and for their family. And the backlash of that, of people like, but you get a year of maternity leave, but I don't want the year. Well, yeah, but what kind of mom, right? The judgment and the assumption that, of course, you're going to want the full year. And so from the variety of moms, what I heard was moms who were struggling because they didn't want to go back to work, moms who desperately want to be back at work and were struggling with people's reactions, and then everything in between. And one of the things that I wanted to show in the book is that motherhood isn't cookie cutter anymore. It's not, you know, it's not like we all stay at home and wash the house, clean the house, and wait for our husbands to get home from work with a hot cooked meal. Like, it's not, we keep going back to this time in our minds, and we expect that that's what life is going to be like, but it's not. Things have changed, and we have so many options, so many choices now, and maybe you don't have any children until you're in your 30s because you're in school, or you didn't meet the right person, or you choose to wait just because you want to enjoy your life and travel. And then other people, maybe they marry their high school sweetheart, and they have a baby in their 20s. And by the time their girlfriends are having children, theirs are already out of the house. And so there's so many different stages of motherhood, and it's not like everyone on your block is doing the exact same thing. So maybe your friends haven't had children yet, and they're inviting you out to go party, and you're exhausted by like 8 and you can't. And all of a sudden you lose a whole bunch of friends because they just stop inviting you. Or maybe your friends have had children already by the time you have yours, and they're happy for you, but they're not at that stage anymore. They don't feel like reliving it. And so as you're sharing stuff that's happening, they're like, yep, I remember that, but they don't want to elaborate or hear about it. They're done. Like, they're so done with that stage. And so it can be harder for a mom to find her tribe, if you will, for a mom to find a group of other moms that are going through the exact same thing that she's going through at that moment.
You mentioned judgment.
Yes.
I think a lot of that stems from kind of these, like, adherence to those, like, kind of old norms of, like, how a mother behaves or what their role is and things like that, and that, because you said, you know, we're moving to a point where everyone is making their own decisions, what works best for them as a parent or, you know, a person, that this is kind of like that clash between the like throwback attitude and the like future of parenting.
Yeah, there's a lot of competition, and it's unfortunate because I think everybody's trying to figure out, did I make the right decision? And we compare our decisions and we try to figure out, oh, I did the right one. No, she's made the right choice. I'm messing up. Or there's all this comparing going on, this competing. And you even see it in birthday parties. Your child has a birthday party. I went to a birthday party once for a five-year-old, and they had rented this hall, and it was like so extravagant. It was almost like a wedding budget. And you see this on Pinterest. You mentioned Pinterest before, where, you know, the costumes that are handmade for Halloween and the treats that the moms made for this birthday party and the clothing that the children are wearing and how much they spent on technology and how much they get from the tooth fairy. I can't remember who it was. Somebody at my daughter's school got $50 for a tooth. And she came home and she was like, so-and-so's mom, or so-and-so got $50 from the tooth fairy. And I was like, really? I mean, what do you say to that? It's just like, well, you don't have the same tooth fairy, obviously. You know, I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of competitiveness. And it is unfortunate because in the end, if we stop focusing on the differences, the how of parenting, and we come back to the fact that we're all doing what works for us, we're each and every one of us was raised in a different family, and we have values and beliefs that come from our upbringing, and then our personalities are different, the partners that we choose are different, our households are different, our children, and so you have to do what works for your family. It's not like a one-size-fits-all approach to motherhood. And if we stop comparing and we just accept that everyone's doing what works for their family and we look at how we can support each other and share and be there for each other, we'll do so much better. Because part of this hesitation to share our struggles is because we fear judgment. And so everybody's got their guard up. And as soon as you share something real and other people share something real, it doesn't matter what your choices are. You're two human beings and you're going to mess up in your own way and you're going to succeed in your own way. And it doesn't matter. What matters is that you have a group of people. You have a tribe. You have people who are there to support you, who acknowledge, you know, you're not invisible. They see you. They know you're trying your best.
Well, speaking of support, some of the proceeds from this book go towards creating community support for mothers, specifically in your hometown of Kempville, Ontario.
Yes.
Wondering, is it like an organization that you've kind of helped spearhead, or was there an existing thing that you kind of tied into?
Last year, I was doing, I think it was in May, and I was talking to a group of moms online. And one of the moms was talking about having children on the spectrum and that there wasn't much support. We were talking about anticipating summer and, you know, the summer holidays coming and what's everybody doing with their kids over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And when she said that there was nothing for children on the spectrum, I thought, I'm going to look it up. And next time we meet, I can bring all of these resources up and, you know, and that would be helpful. But what I realized is she's right. There's nothing. There was nothing for her children, because a lot of the camps, they have criteria regarding who can attend camp and who can't. And a lot of times, if a child is on the spectrum, being in a new situation with new people, it can be overwhelming, especially if it's a huge group.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they get worked up and they act out. And then they're told that, oh no, your child was aggressive, or your child, we couldn't manage your child, so they're not eligible to be in this program. Or if they need toileting, well, they can't accommodate that, so then that child has to stay home. And there's such a huge responsibility on the parents, especially if they have to work, to then become a full-time caregiver for their child, because there's nowhere to blame this child. And so last year when I was hearing this, and it was kind of hitting me like, wow, what do these parents do all summer? I started looking at fundraising to create a respite program where local teenagers would be matched up with a family and go once a week and spend time with children, and so the parents would have a little bit of respite. So this, my thought was that this summer, depending how well the book sold, because I'm trying to organize stuff in anticipation of proceeds.
Right.
I'm hoping people buy the book and that I could have a healthy budget. But my goal is to have the respite program, and I've already talked to different people in the community, and I have an idea sort of what it could look like. But again, it depends on what kind of budget I have. And on a non-budget point of view, I have different things that I've started to do on my own, which is looking for people to be mentors, mommy mentors is what I'm calling it. And so people who can be assigned to a new mom in our area so that they can talk to her and see what she might need as far as support. It could be as simple as, you know, picking up groceries for her, or cooking an extra meal and bringing it over once a week, or helping her take her children to appointments if she doesn't have a car during the day, or just coming over with a cup of coffee and having an adult conversation. So that's one thing that I'm working on, getting people on that list so I can pair them up. And I'm compiling a list of mompreneurs, so mothers who've started their businesses and are trying to make a go of it. It's really hard as an entrepreneur to, you're basically working in isolation trying to make things happen. And so if there's a list of them and we're promoting their business and we're using their services, then that helps them stay home with their children or succeed in business so they have a healthier balance. And then I'm looking at, I had done a needs assessment with families in the area to see what supports they were using, what services they were using, and what supports they'd like to see. And I heard a lot about single moms and then mothers with children on the spectrum. Those were the two where I was seeing a clear need in our community. And so the respite program would help mothers whose children are on the spectrum. And then there's a meetup that I'd like to start in the summer when everybody's out of school called Flying Solo, and it would be a meetup for single moms who, you know, if you want to go to the beach for the day or you want to go to the museum or whatever you want to do, it's an opportunity to meet other moms and kind of, after a while, get to know who in your neighborhood is single, and so that you can plan stuff together and go out on a regular basis.
Well, like all moms, it sounds like you have a lot on your plate. The book is Out of the Moms, available through Amazon. And for more information, people can visit annwalsh.ca, and that's Anne with an E. Happy Mother's Day in advance, Anne, and thanks for taking some time to join us today on the phone.
Thank you so much, Michael. I appreciate it.